It was an awesome interview for me to get to do. I'm a massive fan of this person. I mean, if you clicked on the podcast, I don't know why I'm talking like you don't know who it is. It is Q from the Impractical Jokers. Now, I've been a fan of Q since before Impractical Jokers even existed. We get into why and how on the show, but it was just really cool. This is another one of those interviews where you're going to hear me marking out like a complete fanboy, and I don't even care. It was a great chat. Before we get into it, let me remind you guys about our presenting sponsor, 3Chi. 3Chi and the Delta 8 THC that they make get me through the week, each and every week. I'm telling you guys, all of these products formulated by a biochemist in the USA with USA grown hemp, they're amazing. It's a federally legal version of THC with effects that are the perfect hybrid of CBD and Delta-9 THC. Delta-9 THC is just general marijuana THC. That's the most common form of THC. This, on the other hand, gives you that similar buzz and all the medicinal effects without the laziness, the anxiety, paranoia, and mental fogginess that Delta-9 users report. And Delta-8 users actually say that they feel far more active and outgoing with increased confidence and almost none of the anxiousness and paranoia that Delta-9 users have. Go to 3chi.com right now. That's the number 3chi.com. And you can shop for Delta 8 vapes, gummies, tinctures, and more. You can make homemade edibles, all that stuff. And if you use the promo code Robbie, R-O-B-B-I-E, at checkout, you'll receive 5% off your total order. You're going to want to stock up on 3chi. I promise you, you don't want to be the guy going to their website when they're sold out. All your friends got their 3chi. You don't have yours. Once again, use the promo code Robbie, R-O-B-B-I-E, at checkout, and you'll receive 5% off your order. Don't try to spell my name with a Y, motherfuckers, because it ain't going to work. Now let's get into this interview with Brian Quinn. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to My Mom's Basement. It's Robbie Fox, and I am joined with the star of True TV's Impractical Jokers and also Impractical Jokers Dinner Party, the Misery Index as well, Brian Q. Quinn. Let me just start off this interview by saying I'm a huge fan of yours, dating back before Impractical Jokers. I'm actually a huge Tell 'Em Steve Dave fan.
Oh, whoa.
So, yeah, I came into Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash when I was like 12 years old with my mom, and Mark was behind the counter at the time. And he was there. He said they're recording a podcast back there. It's called Tell 'Em Steve Dave. And I went home and I looked it up, probably too young to look it up, 12 years old. But I've been listening ever since. So thank you for all of the years of entertainment you've provided us there. I'm the Patreon subscriber, all that stuff.
Oh, wow. Thanks, man. Hopefully we didn't lead you astray. Sometimes we give really good advice. Sometimes we just say stupid. Can I curse?
Of course. You can say anything. Yeah.
Okay. Well, then sometimes we just say stupid bullshit just to rile each other up. So, you know, sometimes people don't know when we're kidding, and sometimes people do. So you seem like it turned out okay.
Yeah. It's definitely provided me a lot of levity.
You put on your shirt.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into The Mandalorian a little bit later. Let me just start off by asking how your year's been, 2020. It's been a weird year for everybody, right? But how have you been?
Yeah, I've been pretty – I mean, look, in the beginning, I was just very worried about other people because, it just seemed like everything was going wrong. Here's the problem. I'm built for this. I'm enjoying it. I could do lockdown probably for the rest of my life and be fine with it. But I know that's not the same for everybody. I don't even mean financially. I mean, mentally. There's a lot of, my really only concern is just for people in society at large. But honestly, like, aside from like a week or two where I just start getting stir crazy here or there, like, I'm really doing all right, man.
Yeah, I sort of feel the same way. I feel bad saying that 2020 has been an all right year for me, but it has. I'm glad to hear that it's been okay for you as well. I know it put a hinder in filming Impractical Jokers in a sort of way where you guys had to work around that. Was that kind of creatively fun for you after doing so many seasons of Impractical Jokers, now getting obstacles thrown in the way?
That's a good question. That's a really good question. It is. I needed the break from Impractical Jokers. We had been going 10 years, and that's part of why I'm like this. The shutdown for me in a lot of ways was like, you know, all right. I mean, I say that with a caveat, and I'm going to say this once so I don't have to keep saying it, that I do know society's in a pinch right now. You know what I mean? And that it's a devastating time for humanity. I know all that. I'm only speaking about my own day-to-day experiences. So the break from Impractical Jokers was, you know, we were down, I think our last day of shooting was my birthday, March 14th. And then we were down 6 months at least, no touring, no anything. So it was great because we work so hard and we shoot Practical Jokers over 10 months out of the year that it comes in waves where you're like, holy fuck, I can't believe I got to get up and go do this in the morning. And so we got a good break. I think we need it. We recharged our batteries. And then to come back, and like you said, like, what are the restrictions? And we found that for us, it wasn't that hard. Like, the only thing we really had to worry about was, like, we still need to get people into a building. We still need to keep them unaware of what's going on. And we need to make sure they're tested. And it turns out that that's easy to do. That's not hard to do. Like, we basically have, like, I mean, I don't even know if they're going to want me to say this, but screw it. But, like, we basically have rented. We have, like, Impractical Jokers Studios now. That's what I'm calling it. We rented this large building that has many different areas you could – that have many different looks. There's a kitchen in it. There's a – and we're booking cooking classes. We're booking – so it's like – but we go to the same building every day.
Yeah.
So it's been, like, amazing. You know what I mean? And so – so if anything, it's changed the people we interact with because – like, we were shooting during the last presidential election, and it was very difficult to shoot the tail out of the way. People were pissed, especially in New York City.
Yeah.
I think people now are so loopy and just happy to be out of the house that when they get hired to go do a focus group, they show up in a great mood. Every single person that we've messed with is going to make the TV show because they've all been great. They've been confused, but in a good mood. They've been like, people we're finding that people are ready for a little more weirdness. So it's been great. It's been a lot of fun.
This is probably a question that you get pretty often, but just as someone that's done like man on the street stuff in New York City it myself, do you get recognized a lot as you're trying to do it? Like now that you're 10 years in?
Yeah, it does happen. It happens every time we shoot, but the way I always put it is, because we do get this question, is, you know, there's 8 million people in Manhattan alone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
7, whatever the number is. 7 million people do not watch Impractical Jokers a week. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
There's so many people that don't watch the show. There's so many people that are unaware of us. We're still kind of like, we're pretty under the radar still in terms of even pop culture. You know what I mean? Like, you don't see, I mean, you do if you turn to True TV, but you know what I mean? Like, it's like, we're still.
Yeah, you guys are on like 24/7, I feel like. Say now, compared to season 5, have you noticed, whoa, this has become a much larger issue with us getting recognized, or no?
No, not really. It's kind of been, because we've also gotten better at combating it and coming up with ways to combat it, like, which I wouldn't tell you now, because then people will know what we do.
No, of course, yeah, don't spoil the secrets.
That will, before people even see us, know whether they watch Impractical Jokers. And then we just have like 3 different checks
that
before they
sense.
Even get to us. It's a little different when we're shooting Washington Square Park and you're just out in public, but that's Washington Square Park. You're also dealing with crackheads. You're also dealing with homeless.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you're also dealing with like a wide variety of protein. Like, so it's just, you know, when you go to Washington Square Park, it's just one of the things you're dealing with.
Yeah, so another one of the things you've had come up in 2020 is the Misery Index, and you've also had Dinner Party and Practical Jokers at Home, where you've been able to shoot that in your own home. What's that experience been like for you?
Well, Misery Index is interesting because we just finished shooting 20 more episodes last week, and it was interesting. Like, I wasn't – they asked us if we would be willing to shoot it. You know, I got to say, the networks – have been amazing. They have not forced anything. They have been safety first, whatever you guys are comfortable with. So when they approached us about Misery Index, and they were like, do you guys feel comfortable thinking, do you think you could shoot this? And I was like, no fucking way. but we gave them a list of safety things that we would need put into place before we did it, for us and for the contestant and for the audience. And it was one of those things where I was like, we're going to give them this list, and they're going to be like, no, fuck that. Like, no way. And then they went through and they did the entire list. I mean, I'm talking like, we got tested every single day, rapid test and range and the longer test. Contestants got, they put them in a hotel and quarantine. Like, it was, they really did it. They did it. And it worked. It worked really well. Dinner Party, which is us doing what me and you are doing right now.
Yeah.
This is basically it. Like, me and my friends sit around and talk. Has been, I think, if I would do Dinner Party for the rest of my life, I love it. It'd be so much fun. It's just a blast. It's no pressure. It's just us having fun. We still get, you know, obviously we can't do Practical Jokers type stuff, but we could still fuck with each other, and we could still find ways to surprise each other or mess with each other. And we built this weird, and you'll see through season two, like there's actually a mythology to the show, which is always insane to me that we've managed to build side characters and callbacks and storylines. And it's like, but it's all genuine because we're not really making anything. I mean, you know, there's some jokes on the show, but that's when we throw to a video that we pre-shot. You know, we pre-shot it. But for the most part, it's just played straight and having a blast. I love Dinner Party.
The passion that you guys have for it definitely like comes through. Like Dinner Party is a very fun, casual watch. You throw it on, like you're going to laugh. You're going to have a fun time. And speaking about the mythology of it, tell them Steve Dave, I feel like as a podcast, might have the best mythology of all time. And I'm obviously biased saying that as a giant fan of the podcast. But how would you describe Tell 'Em Steve Dave to someone that's never listened? Because I was trying to think of it because I'm thinking if someone hasn't listened to Tell 'Em Steve Dave and they want to know a little bit about it, how would I describe it? I don't know how I would do it.
Yeah, Tell 'Em Steve Dave is a tough one because it's not what it was even 3 years ago. And it's not what it was 5 years before that. Like it started as just three friends sitting around talking, and Brian Johnson, who's Brian and Walt Flanagan, who host Tell 'Em Steve Dave with me, for anybody listening, it was about, like, Brian was struggling with depression, and he started doing this podcast, thinking that maybe he could pull him out of it. And this is back, like, when we started Tell 'Em Steve Dave, podcasting wasn't a thing.
Yeah, you guys just passed the 10-year anniversary.
Yeah, I mean, it was a thing, but it wasn't what it is now at all, you know? It was not. All right, Benjamin, he really wants to weigh in on this. It just wasn't. It was just, you know, and it's now it's weird. It's hard to – I see. I don't even know how to explain it.
Tough. It's this inner – and I see some parallels with Barstool in that, like, there's just a bunch of wacky characters that will come in and out. There's guest hosts like Sunday Jeff and Get Him Steve Dave and Maxwell and even Declan. And, like, there's just – all of the listeners know all of the intricacies. They know the person that edits the podcast. They know now with the Patreon, the people that film it. Like, it's an interesting community, and it's so, like, New Jersey in a way, too. As someone that grew up in New Jersey, I feel like I know people that are like everyone on the show. I know a guy that's like that. Oh, I know a guy that's like that. So it's just been a really great podcast over the years. Like I said, with the mythology of Tell 'Em Steve Dave Town and the Baron Von Flanagan, stuff like that.
It's and it keeps evolving because it was like it's like, look, we went through the thing in the beginning where Brian was depressed and I was kind of dealing with some stuff too, and then it went into Brian became a drug addict on the show and like we went through rehab with him, and you hear him for 3 years he's completely zonked out of his fucking head, you know what I mean, and we talk about it on the show.
Yeah,
and it's like and you know, and ask struggles to get him help and stuff like that. Then it went into like I was a fireman when it started. Then it became the TV show. Then you track the whole fucking journey of me becoming a 10-year on Practical Joker. Like it's just this weird thing. But then, like, all right, so like for anybody listening, and you of course know this, is there was this guy who stole our web domain. He stole our web domain from us. He got tellemstevedave.com, then was gonna sell it to us for $700, and then rescinded that, then wanted double that. And we hated him. And now he's on every episode of the show. He works at the comic book store with Walt. He's a fan favorite on the show. I love the guy. Like, it's just – and the evolution of Get Him from some just weird fucker who we hated to this weird fucker that we love. It's fascinating. It's fascinating, man. It really is.
It truly is like an amazing journey. And talk about Bri. Like, Bri's now married and happier than he's ever been. It's almost like a television show is like, you know, a character has reached this entire arc. And it's, again, it's like a parallel to Barstool. So barstoolsports.com is our website.
Sure,
I know. Someone else owns barstool.com. This guy Zonker, who we hate, hates us, and he won't give it up. Our boss has offered him like $1 million, and he's like, no, I hate your website, not giving it up.
I mean, $1 million, you give it up. Like, what's he have?
I think he's one of these, he's maybe a politically, like, his brain is broken a bit, and he perceives us as something that we're not.
So yeah, well, that's like,
I'm not giving it up. It's a whole thing. One more thing on the Tell 'Em Steve Dave front, and I know this story, but I think it's such a funny and fascinating one for listeners to hear. your introduction. So Brian and Walter Flanagan are Kevin Smith's childhood, and kind of he grew up with them as best friends. Your introduction to them was sort of through Kevin Smith, and you got an internship with him in one of the most funny, bizarre ways I could ever imagine. Do you want to tell that story if you can?
Oh, yeah, because Kevin, Kevin is great, man. He was the first, as far as I could tell, he was the first celebrity that was on the internet directly interacting with his fans on a daily basis. And it's weird how he doesn't get enough credit for that, but he did it. And Mallrats came out, and I wanted to buy the Mallrats script book. So I went to Walden Books in the Staten Island Mall, and I asked the guy for, I mean, I was 19, 20 years old. And the guy's like, nah, we don't carry that. Kevin Smith sucks. And I was like, oh, Jesus Christ. And he kind of like made me feel like a dick. He was putting me down and also putting down this one of my heroes in the same moment. And I'm like, but you work here. What is this opinion coming my way? So I went on the web board that Kevin was on the time, and I told him that. I said, so Kevin sent me, without telling me he was doing it, in the mail one day, comes the script book, and it's signed by Kevin, and he writes, give that bookstore dork some shit. So I took a tape recorder, and I did exactly what he told me to do. I went into the bookstore, and I said, you know, I just started screaming at him, and I was like, you suck, and I started doing quotes from Mallrats. I mean, I wasn't, like, being aggressive. Even he knew that I was – my buddy Chris was there. He was laughing. I was laughing. But it was really funny. And then he was like, you better get out of it. And then I sent the tape to ViewAskew. And the way they tell it is that they put the tape in and played it. They were like – they were all fucking dying laughing. They thought it was so funny. And Kevin goes, we got to get this guy to work for us. And that's how I started. That's how I got my internship there.
That's unbelievable. And the tape is out there. I mean, it's so funny. I'll insert it into this podcast so people could listen to it.
I can't wait unless we get you for the morning. Oh, yeah. Look, well, Kevin Smith's a good friend of mine. I told him you said he really told me to get down here and give the bookstore a door some shit. That's you, motherfucker. Some shit. Sorry. Fuck you, you cocksmoking clerk. I'm gonna bust this place up, Smith style.
I think you should start going.
Let's go, motherfucker. I ain't going nowhere. What are you gonna do about it?
Calm down.
Yeah, that's just a message. Fuck you. Good. Eat shit. Good. Eat my shit.
I better get the fuck out of here. Yeah, you better get out of here.
The way the guy responds is so, like, passive, and he's just like...
He's totally cool about it. Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I always wonder where that guy ended up, because I don't really have anything against him. To send my friend one of my heroes. So I would love to find the guy and talk to him.
And he then when do you meet Brian and Walter through that? Was it, like, instantly when you get the job at ViewAskew, or was that years down the line?
It was pretty instantly. Well, what happened was Kevin opened the Secret Stash.
Yep.
At its first location, and he hired Brian to run it. And the first time I met them, I mean you know this story, but like I got into a car accident. I left the ViewAskew office, and I was driving back to Staten Island, and this kid came out and hit me, almost flipped my car, banged my head pretty quick. And the Stash was a block away, so I walked to the Stash to use the phone. This was before cell phones, and call my parents to come get me, or my brother or something. And I get into the store, and it's Mosier and Walt and Brian Johnson. And I tell him, you know, and I was like, I was just in a car accident. Mosier for like up front, like was, you know, acted appropriately. And Johnson just turns to me and he goes, well, you know, when you're sucking dick, you're supposed to be in the passenger seat when you do it. And I was like still hurting, and like my arm was all banged up. I was like, it was 10 minutes before the accident. And this guy's like, already fucking,
he's ripping you for it.
Just ripping me for it. He's like, you don't even know how to suck dick right. And I'm like, and that was it. And that was the beginning of my friendship with him. And then what happened is I would get to ViewAskew in the morning. I would get all my work done within the first 2 hours. I would speed round. And then I'd just go to the comic book store and work with Brian Johnson all day. So it's like we had years of just hanging out together, and we just became really close friends. And he helped me. My 20s were like a really hard time for me. And he helped me a lot. So he's a good guy.
Yeah. I mean, I've appreciated you guys always being so open about that. The Scooter Dude Forever episode was as open as anyone could be. And that is something that I've tried to do on my podcast. I've suffered from crazy depression and anxiety and stuff. And I've always just tried to talk about it, sort of inspired by you guys. So thank you.
Oh, that's good. I think it helps you to do it, right? Like, yeah, it helps me to do it. It just totally destigmatizes it for myself. And we hear that a lot. It's the number one thing I get from Tell 'Em Steve Davis. You guys have helped me through some sort of depression and stuff like that, which is great.
All right, so let's get into some nerdy stuff. The show is called My Mom's Basement. I know you're a bit of a geek, a nerd yourself. Let's talk about just some things that you're into, starting off with Ghostbusters. We've got a bit of a reboot sequel coming out. I know your opinions on the last one, same opinions as pretty much everyone else have, I think.
Yeah.
What are your feelings on the new one?
It's odd that I wasn't as angry about the 2016 one as a lot of people were.
Yeah, like, I wasn't angry. To be honest, I don't even think I've ever seen the full thing. I've seen bits and pieces of it, and it's not for me.
It's just a shitty movie, man. The script was so bad. Yeah. That's unfortunate, because the cast is home run, but what are you going to do? I'm looking forward to the new one.
Yeah.
I'm excited. My whole thing about it, before we even started seeing how the movie eventually turned out, the 2016 one, was why on earth would they abandon continuity? Like that is a gift to you.
Yeah.
Like, it's a gift to you that they made these movies in the 80s and that the equipment's there and the technology's there. You could do so much more of an interesting origin story for a new team besides the same first fucking movie. You know what I mean? Just with shittier looking costumes, shittier looking proton packs, and it's just like, and shittier jokes. It's just, it was bad. But the new one is heavily steeped in it, and I got to imagine I'm going to see all the things I want to see.
Yeah, I mean, even in that first trailer, when they cut to like the old school news footage of the original team, I get chills, and it's like, oh, like you said, why would you abandon that? Especially in the age of fan service, where you could show such a little thing like that and get everyone going crazy for it. So I'm with you on that. I think that's going to be really great. I know you're a Mandalorian fan. You mentioned the Baby Yoda hoodie. You got Baby Yoda behind you. Have you seen this week's episode?
The one that, what's today?
On Friday. I guess a week ago. It was last Friday. Yes. What were your opinions on it? We talk Mandalorian every week on this show. Huge fans.
Okay. I'm loving it. I do like it. My only thing, I love Kaden Sackhoff, right?
Yep.
Battlestar Galactica is just one of my faves. I'm actually rewatching now. She's great. So I'm happy to see her in anything. Oh, and actually, I'm a big wrestling fan too. So it was nice, you know.
Sasha Banks.
The legit boss up on screen. But I don't know those characters. And I know they're from Clone Wars. I never watched Clone Wars, and I never watched Rebels. So I don't know them. So I didn't get as excited as everybody else did.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I did love, there was a line in it that I was like, that is awesome. And you already may know the answer to it. But she implied basically that Mando is basically part of a weird Amish cult.
Yeah, death cult. She uses that term. She's like, oh, you're one of those.
I was like, that blew my mind. I was like, holy crap. I was like, that is such a cool idea that he doesn't even know he's in a cult.
Yeah, so that's one of those things I think the show has done a really good job of balancing, because last season when we saw the flashback of him getting rescued as a child by the Mandalorians, if you looked very closely at the emblem on all of their armor and you were a Clone Wars fan like myself, I mean, I'm the craziest nerd ever. I got a lightsaber tattooed on my arm. Like, I'm so insane about this stuff that it's a little embarrassing. But it sort of clued you into the fact that he might be a part of this death cult, Death Watch, it's called. So I think they've done a good job of balancing it where it's fan service for the hardcore fans. But if you don't know that, you don't have to know that. They'll get to it. Yeah. They'll explain it eventually. I think the same thing will go for Katie Sackhoff's character where, you know, they'll get to her backstory. They'll explain it all.
Yeah, I know. I mean, look, the Darksaber, I know that was a thing, and it looked so cool. I love it. I love the show. There's not an episode I don't like. And the first episode of this season was my favorite episode of the whole thing so far, because
I'm
like
with you on that
reunion and stuff, and I loved it. I really do.
All right, another thing I would love to talk to you about. I know you're a Batman fan. We've got Matt Reeves' Batman coming out soon. I think this thing looks awesome with Pattinson behind the cowl. How do you feel about this?
Love it. I there's very few things that I wouldn't like to see Batman. I think he's great, man. I watched the Lost City of Z.
Yeah.
And I saw him in that, and I was like, oh, man, this guy's freaking good, because I never saw the Twilight movies, you know. Benjamin, do you have an opinion on this?
Oh, that was a full, like, you're having a conversation over there.
He is. We talk to each other all day. What were we talking about? Oh, Rob Pattinson.
Pattinson.
I'm in.
Have you seen Good Time with him?
I didn't. I gotta. I know. Sal tells me all the time. He's like, you gotta watch it. It's so good.
It's a crazy, crazy good movie. I mean, especially if you liked Uncut Gems, it's that same like anxiety-inducing style of movie making.
Same directors, right? Like the same guys made it.
Same directors, and one of them is co-star in the movie. Actually, it's a really, really good watch. And Pattinson just doing like a scumbag Queens impersonation is very funny to watch.
That's great. I'll do that, Benjamin. I am on a professional call. I can't wait. I think the Batmobile looks amazing. I love the picture that I saw of the Penguin. The fact that it doesn't even look like him.
I didn't know that was him when I watched the trailer. I had to see like one of those, listicles that tells you, oh, this was actually who it was.
Yeah, I'm there for anything, man. Like, how did you feel about what's his name's Joker? The one everybody hates.
Jared Leto?
Yeah.
I didn't hate it because I look at all that stuff as like, I'm a comic book fan, so I look at that as like, man, it's a what if. It's a what if Joker was a gangster who ran a nightclub. So I was fine with it. I didn't love the damage tattoo just because I can't imagine the Joker walking into a tattoo parlor and being like, I think we should do that. But you know what? It is what it is. I'm not one of these people that gets angry over stuff like that.
Yeah. I was like, there were actually parts of that I enjoyed of his performance, but I was like, but I did. Somebody described him as the Hot Topic Joker, and I was like, that is perfect.
It's spot on.
That nails it. But I wasn't as angry as everybody else was about it. But I'm also getting older, so who knows?
Yeah, I mean, he's connected to the next thing I was going to ask you about, and that's the Snyder Cut. Now, I'm not one of these Snyder Cut crazies that was campaigning for this thing to get released for years, and they want the original vision to come out, but I'm interested in it. You know, it's apparently a 4-hour miniseries it's going to be now, so there's going to be a ton of new footage. Jared Leto apparently will be back in it. How do you feel about that? And even like connected to it, we've got a new cut of The Godfather 3 coming out, like the Snyder cut of The Godfather 3. How do you feel about people now going back and recutting old movies like this?
I love it. I don't mind it at all because like, I think George Lucas didn't do it right in the way that he, one, made them worse, but also took the originals out of circulation.
Yeah.
Like, as long as you leave the original in circulation, I'm all for it. I'll buy 20 versions of Army of Darkness if they make 20 versions of Army of Darkness. I just will. I love it. That's like what I like seeing. So to me, Snyder Cut, I didn't, I'm like you. I wasn't like, I must see it, but I'm definitely like, oh man, I want to see it now that it's coming out.
I mean, Darkseid on the big screen, like as a comic book fan, I'll watch Darkseid, like some good guys.
Darkseid I want to see, I wasn't the hugest fan of the takes of some of the characters. Like the Flash, I don't know, the Flash, and I've never liked Cyborg as a character.
Yeah.
Until Doom Patrol. And now I watch Doom Patrol and I'm like, Cyborg's the best, man. Awesome.
I got to get into that. I watched the first episode and I really enjoyed it. I think based on your recommendation, actually, you might have said it on a podcast and I just haven't continued, but I really did enjoy the first episode. And that's one of those shows where it seems like they're really going for the wackiness.
Oh yeah. They embrace every weird thing that you can do in comics. I love that show and Cyborg. And I know people love him from the Teen Titans animated series, but I never watched that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That was when I was a kid. Yeah.
Did you watch it?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I was into it as a kid. I liked it. Yeah, I had all the action figures. So I like Cyborg, but when he was in the Justice League, I was almost like, what? He's a Teen Titan. Like, why are you putting him in the Justice League? So
Well,
the footage they've showed in the Snyder Cut of him playing for like the Gotham football team and stuff, though, I think that looks pretty sweet.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I'm excited about it because like, I'm like, oh, maybe it'll give me a chance because really Doom Patrol made me want to like Cyborg.
Yeah.
Well, in the past, I was just like, what's his story? Like, nobody ever, like, what's a good cyborg?
It's pretty basic, too. It's just he's a cyborg, and his name is Cyborg. And if you look at him, he's a cyborg.
Right.
There's not much to him,
He's a cyborg, but it's just like, all right, so why don't, like, I know Alan Moore isn't doing comics anymore, but, like, take Cyborg, give him to Alan Moore, and, like, let's have a whole issue about what it's like to not have a dick anymore. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Because he's never played, like, Cyborg has always just played, like, tough. And all the information flows through him. And I'm like, okay, so he's another Martian Manhunter.
Yeah,
so,
he's kind of the muscle for the team a lot of the time. Where
I don't know
come
anything
in,
about his personal
hit a laser
life.
And yeah.
Nothing about Cyborg's personal life because nobody's ever given it to me. I'm just like, who cares about this guy? So the fact that they show him as a football player and stuff, I'd be excited to see that.
Yeah, listen, I'm excited for any new superhero footage, especially in 2020 where things have been kind of sparse. I'm all for it. Give us Wonder Woman on HBO. Give us Black Widow if you can. I'll take it all. Before we get you out of here, it's been a tough year on small businesses. You're a small business owner yourself. You own a beer company. You want to give that a plug before we get out for any of the listeners that want to hit that?
Yeah, I would love to. I started, we opened the beer company around a year ago called R&H Beer, Rubson and Horman. And it's the Staten Island brewery that was in business from 1886 to 1950. And I brought it back and we're making beer and it's really great beer. I love it. And it's like, you can go to our website, rh.com, and not only can you order beer there, but also I got to tell you, the labels are pretty cool. They all feature Benjamin Cat. You know what I mean? They all got my boy.
There
on.
He is.
He's all over the place. There's Hidden Tell Him Steve Dave jokes on the labels. So actually the merch actually sells better than the beer. But I think that's because of the pandemic. We were in a lot of bars and then now, you know.
Yeah, timing just couldn't have been worse.
Yeah, but we're just releasing a holiday brew. It's exciting. I love the beer company.
Awesome. So go check that out, ladies and gentlemen. This has been a pleasure. This has been really cool for me. So I appreciate the time. I appreciate the time. Everyone check out the Misery Index and, of course, Impractical Joker's Dinner Party.